Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the church.
I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. One of the most significant and unique structures in Latter-day Saint history is the Cardston, Alberta Temple. And here to tell us the reasons for that significance are historians Gary Boatwright and Brady Winslow. Welcome to the program. Before we get started, please give us some background on yourselves and what you do. Gary.
Well, my name's Gary Boatwright. I'm a curator for the Historic Sites Division in the Church History Department. And just I'm able to research and write about the wonderful historic sites of the church, which also includes historic temples.
So. Excellent.
My name is Brady Winslow. For the past year, I interned with the Historic Sites Division of the Church History Department. So I worked closely with Gary, and we both did some research together on the Cardston, Alberta Temple. And I'm currently preparing to go off to graduate school in the fall.
Excellent. Glad you're both here. Thank you. We have another legacy episode on the settling of Southern Alberta, but briefly remind us how Latter-day Saints found themselves in Canada, Gary.
Well, basically, because of the anti-polygamy movement in the United States and laws that were passed, Charles Card was asked by John Taylor to move to Southern Alberta and to begin a community. That one community led to a number of other Latter-day Saint settlements, and there are other factors which drew people up there. But eventually, these communities, there was a strong base of Latter-day Saints in Southern Alberta at the turn of the century. Faithful Latter-day Saints who, even after the polygamy issue went away with the manifesto, many remained there.
So here they are in a faraway land. Did they have any inkling ever that they would get a temple?
Actually, yeah. They, in fact, shortly after the first group of pioneers arrive in Cardston, during their first Sunday meeting on June 19th, 1887, a member by the name of Jonathan E. Lane, he actually predicted that there would be a temple built in the country. And then a year later, Elder John W. Taylor, who was a member of the Quorum of the Twelve at the time, they had actually selected a site for a temple or a religious building, which was common in Mormon settlements. And while they were visiting that spot, Elder Taylor said, "I now speak by the power of prophecy and say that upon this very spot shall be erected a temple to the name of Israel's God." So very early in the history of the saints in Southern Alberta, there was a desire and a wish that a temple would be erected among them.
So for being a temple building and temple attending people, they were a long way from a temple. Where did they go before they actually got their temple?
Well, the closest temple was Logan, which is quite a distance. At the time, there was four temples in operation, the one in Logan, Salt Lake, Manti, and St. George. And as you pointed out, it was a tremendous undertaking to go to the temple. We can kind of compare it to many of the saints today around the world who live, great distances from the temple, and the cost and the time and the means that it takes them to go to the temples. It was the same for these Latter-day Saints. And this was actually quite a concern to Joseph Fielding Smith as a member of the First Presidency and also eventually as president of the church. And in 1901, President Smith, in General Conference, he said that there never was a time until within the last few years when the Latter-day Saints had access to four temples in which to administer the ordinances of the gospel for the living and the dead. And those four are becoming too distant. At least the people are becoming so numerous in distant parts of the country that even though we have four temples in which to administer the ordinances of the gospel, there are thousands of our people who are practically deprived of the privilege of enjoying them because they are so far removed from them. Under these circumstances, I foresee the necessity arising for other temples or places consecrated to the Lord for the performance of the ordinance of God's house, so that the people may have the benefits of the house of the Lord without having to travel hundreds of miles for that purpose. And so there was clearly a need to take temples closer to the people. And, you know, not only were there saints in southern Alberta, but in Hawaii, in northern Mexico. And these people had to spend a lot of their time, a lot of money to come to the temples in Utah. And Joseph F. Smith saw that as a problem that needed to be corrected.
So I'm jumping borders here, but I'm just kind of wondering why the saints in Juarez didn't get a temple. Any idea?
Well, the Mexican colonies were actually abandoned shortly after the turn of the century. So there wasn't a strong Latter-day Saint presence in Mexico anymore when this was coming up. But the Mesa, Arizona temple is kind of falls along the same lines as, or the reasons for it being constructed is fulfills this same vision that Joseph F. Smith had.
Very good. So it hadn't been that long that the church had been in some financial problems. How was the church going to afford another new temple?
Well, that was an issue. It was a huge issue. The church was deeply in debt around the turn of the century. But President Lorenzo Snow was the one who really began emphasizing tithing and preaching tithing to members of the church throughout the Utah. And in General Conference, many members of the First Presidency, the Quorum of the Twelve, they repeatedly encouraged tithing. And even in these outlying settlements, as I've read through some of the local records, tithing was emphasized heavily. And I think Joseph F. Smith knew that in order for him to build more temples, the church had to be on more solid footing financially. But because of the tremendous effort placed by church leaders to stress the principle of tithing, faithful members heeded their teachings and paid their tithing. And so it allowed the church essentially to get out of debt, but also to afford financially to construct the Alberta Temple and also numerous temples that would follow.
So they finally announce that a temple is going to be built in southern Alberta. How did they go about this? How did they decide what it was going to look like? Who was going to build it?
Well, it's a very interesting process, very different than what the church had done at the time. But as you pointed out, the Alberta Temple was announced in October 1912 conference. And all they said was that they would build a temple in Canada. They didn't say where in Canada that they were going to build it. They just said it would be built at a later time, or it would be decided at a later time where it would be built. But also, shortly after that, they said that the temple would be built in a character as to meet the needs of the people. And looking back on it, it was implying, at least I see, that, you know, there are going to be some changes as to the look of the temple, how we're going to design it. And what the First Presidency did is they authorized the presiding bishop to send out invitations to local architect firms to submit a drawing for the temple. And so basically they had a competition for the design of the Alberta Temple. And, you know, that it's very unique, very different, especially when you're talking about a religious inspirational building. You know, usually it's something that comes from, you know, the church itself saying, here's the design, here's how we're going to build it.
Like Brigham with his inspired drawings of
yes.
the spires, et cetera.
Yeah. So they sent out invitations to submit a drawing. But also with that invitation, they send out some design parameters. And a couple of the more interesting ones is that first, the design didn't have to have a large assembly room, which is what all the temples to that time had, a central gathering place in the building. The second thing was that it didn't need to have a tower or towers. And that was very odd for temples at the time, because the four temples and then even the going back to Kirtland and Nauvoo, they all had a tower. And generally, we look at religious buildings as having a tower or a steeple. And so a number of architecture firms submitted drawings. And on January 1st of 1913, the Deseret News published the winning submission. And that was done by two young architects, Hiram C. Pope and Harold W. Burton of Salt Lake City, and their firm known as Pope and Burton. And their focus was to they didn't want to copy what had been done before, but they really wanted to meet the specific requirements that the church had established in the needs that this temple would need. And so the architecture of the Cardston Temple was very unique at the time for a Latter-day Saint temple. It's a kind of a squatty building. To me, it looks like a fortress. It doesn't have a steeple or a tower or spires. It's very angular, and it was heavily influenced by the work of Frank Lloyd Wright, who's a prominent and American architect at the time. But they didn't just look to him for inspiration. They also combined a lot of unique elements that they had designed themselves into this building that would become the Cardston Alberta Temple.
I have to admit a similar feeling as you do. When I see that temple, it's just there. It, as you say, squatty, perhaps, maybe not the best word. But, and when I see pictures, it's a little deceiving. Some of the construction photos that I saw in some of your documents, I could see a person standing there, and it's much larger than it appears.
Oh, yes,
It's much, much larger.
And I have the same impression when I visited there for the first time last year. It is a much larger building than pictures portray it to be.
Pope and Burton designed a couple of other temples for the church. Which ones were they?
They did. They also designed the Hawaii Temple in La'ie. Because of their work on the Cardston Temple, the church just asked them if they would design the Hawaiian Temple. Harold Burton was involved in the construction or the design and construction of the Oakland Temple as well. But their influence, the influence that Pope and Burton had on temple construction can be seen in a number of temples. Probably the most noticeable is the Mesa, Arizona temple.
And something I noticed, some of the similarities between the few that you just mentioned are the bas-relief sculptures in the exteriors. Do you know anything about those? Can you tell us about that?
Well, Pope and Burton, when they designed the Cardston Alberta Temple, they were basically giving kind of a blank check. They could be involved and have their hands in every aspect of the design. And so that not included the exterior, but the interior as well. But the bas-relief, they commissioned Torlif Knafis to create a frieze or bas-relief chapel for the Alberta Temple. And his artwork, it's called The Samaritan Woman at the Well, and essentially it greets everybody who enters the Cardston Temple. Originally, it was outside of the building, but subsequent expansions have enclosed it. But it's an amazing addition to a temple, something that, you know, outside of, you know, like the symbols on the Salt Lake Temple, this was a large piece of artwork. It wasn't just, you know, symbols or signs or even, you know, small etchings. But this, you could almost call it a tradition at the turn of the century. It found its way into the Hawaii Temple. Around the top of the Hawaii Temple is four friezes that depict the four dispensations of the gospel. And then also around the Mesa, Arizona Temple, same thing. There are friezes around that basically tell the story of the church in Arizona. And the Oakland Temple also, which again was Burton had some influence with, there's a frieze on the outside of it.
Excellent. We're discussing the history of the Cardston, Alberta Temple today on Legacy. Joining me are Brady Winslow and Gary Boatwright, both from the Church History Department. So the actual site for the temple seemed for a time to be up in the air, at least to the locals. Which two towns were vying for the temple site?
That's a great question. The two towns were Cardston and then Raymond. And what's interesting is we actually have photographs from both towns of the temple site where the sites that they had picked out, sent those to church headquarters. And the Cardston site was the one that was chosen over the Raymond site.
But a neat thing about these photographs, when you look at them, you know, looking at a photograph, you can't really see the layout of the land. And the members up there wanted church leaders to really see how the land was formed and the terrain. And so they gathered up everybody in their community, and they would line them up along different points of the land. So as church leaders would look at these pictures, they could see the depth and see the rise of the land. And it's to me, I just find that fascinating that the whole community was gathered to, you know, trying to convince or persuade church leaders to build the temple in their community.
Not necessarily another competition like the design, but similar perhaps.
Yeah.
So regardless of where the locals wanted the temple, well, I guess it was President Smith who made the final decision and traveled for the dedication to Cardston.
Yeah, he traveled to Cardston and dedicated the site on July 27th of 1913. And in the dedicatory prayer, 10 years later, President Heber J. Grant referred to the blessing that it was for President Smith to visit and dedicate the site because the temple, well, President Smith passed away before the temple was completed. And so he was never able to really see this vision that he had of taking temples to the people. But shortly after that, on November 5th, 1913, ground was broken and construction began. And the construction was going at a pretty good pace. On September 19th, 1915, David O. McKay traveled to the site and laid the cornerstone for the Cardston Temple. And then just about 2 years after that, the capstone was laid. And so the exterior, the shell of the building, was completed in just a few years. But it would take another 6 years before the building would actually be completed and dedicated.
Do we know why the interior took so long?
There were a couple of factors for that. One was the weather. They had some harsh winters up there, which slowed construction and I believe slowed the availability of materials. The second thing was World War I. That took, just like in the United States, where it took a number of resources. Canada as well was neck deep in the war, and resources were scarce. And so really those two factors kind of drug out the construction time for the Cardston Temple. But it's kind of ironic, the Hawaiian Temple, which was announced after the Cardston Temple, was actually finished
before
the Cardston Temple. And I'm still trying to figure out the reasoning for that.
So 10 years later, they had a temple. And as you mentioned, it was President Grant who was there for the dedication.
Yes, it was dedicated on August 26, 1923. And the whole community and in the area just were amazed and thankful and grateful. Many were able to participate in the dedicatory sessions, you know, with choirs and other things. But it was definitely a wonderful day for the saints in Alberta. It was a day that they had waited a very long time for. And there was, I believe there was some question throughout the church as to why the church built a temple in Canada. And in fact, this was just a year or so after President Smith announced it, and you know, people were asking, why are we building a temple in Alberta? And going back to the distance and the great length that it took for people to get to a temple, he related the story of a returned missionary from northern British Columbia. And he says that, you know, this young man, he served a faithful mission, came home, found a good woman to marry. But he would have to spend all of his means to travel to Utah to be sealed. And so this temple in Alberta proved to be a great blessing for the saints up there. No longer would they have to spend a great amount of time and a great amount of money to enjoy the blessings of the temple.
So there have been some renovations over the ensuing 89 years or so. What additions and changes have occurred to the Alberta Temple?
Some of the work began in the 1950s. There was, of course, a need to update the technology. There was a new entrance that was built during that time in the 50s and 60s. If you look at pictures of it, you could tell it was done in the 1950s. It was very dated. But in the late 1980s, the church closed the temple. They were again going to upgrade the heating and air conditioning systems. And as they began kind of pulling off some layers, they found original murals, which had been covered up over time, and some of the original other artwork, the woodwork, which is tremendous in the Alberta Temple. And so the church decided, you know, we're not just going to update this temple, we're going to restore it. And so they went through and meticulously restored the interior of the temple back to its 1920 splendor. And so if you go to the temple today, as you're going through it, you are essentially going through the same building that Heber J. Grant dedicated. And of course, there have been, you know, some changes due to technology and other things. But it's like walking back in time, and it's such a beautiful building. In my personal opinion, it is probably the best temple that the church has ever built. Architecturally, the design, it's a classic building that will never go out of date and will never go out of style. And in fact, not only has the church recognized this, but the government of Canada has recognized this. And the Cardston Temple is actually designated as a National Historic Site in Canada, which is very rare among our temples to have a designation like that.
So you mentioned that in the restoration they were uncovering some of the murals. Do we know who the artists were that may have painted those?
Yeah, we do, actually. And I think the neat thing about these artists is they were all Latter-day Saints. So those that did the murals were LeConte Stewart, Lee Green Richards, A.B. Wright, and Edwin Evans. And again, I think that's great that, you know, they brought in LDS artists to actually participate in making the building so beautiful.
And the neat thing about these artists is they each had their own style, and they each did different rooms in the temple. So when you go through the temple, there's a different style in every room. And at first, when I began studying about this and thinking, well, you know, they had different artists, well, you know, that must clash somehow, you know, because artist styles can vary significantly. But after going through the temple, it meshes so well. The artwork, the woodwork, again, it's very beautiful, and it is a treasure of the church, not just the building, but the artwork and the woodwork that is inside of the building.
Of course, our listeners will also know that we're going to put some pictures on the website, mm-hmm. so they can see some of these things. But despite its location, Latter-day Saints populations have continued to grow in that area, necessitating construction of even more temples. What other temples are now in that area up in Canada?
In Alberta itself, there's the Edmonton Alberta Temple, and then the Calgary Temple, which will be dedicated, I believe, sometime this year. There are now three temples in Alberta. And going back to when we first began our discussion, the quote by Jonathan Lane, or the prophecy by Jonathan Lane, you know, he said that he didn't see just one temple. He saw temples, multiple temples. And, you know, the faithful Latter-day Saints up there, they are blessed, and the Lord has blessed them for their faithfulness. And so, you know, those in Calgary, those in Edmonton no longer have to drive to Cardston. They have temples closer by. And we're seeing that across around the world. I see President Joseph F. Smith as the forerunner of President Gordon B. Hinckley. They both faced similar issues. The church was growing substantially in different areas away from the core or Mormon areas or from where there was temples. And these people needed to have the blessings of the temple. And just like, you know, in the early 1900s, in the 1990s, you know, people had to sacrifice to go to a temple. And so I believe Joseph F. Smith and Gordon B. Hinckley, they were both inspired to be temple builders, to take temples closer to members of the church in their time. And that is continuing today under President Monson. We have more and more temples being built, and it's amazing when you think about the work of the Lord and the faithful who are being gathered, and the Lord wants to bless them. He wants them to receive all the ordinances so they can be saved. And the Lord has set up an organization, the church, to do that. And both President Hinckley and Joseph F. Smith, they were preceded by people who helped make that available. As we talked about, Joseph F. Smith was preceded by Lorenzo Snow. He emphasized tithing, which allowed the church to get out of debt and allowed the church to financially be able to afford to construct more temples. And President Hinckley, he was preceded by President Howard W. Hunter, who his emphasis during his short time as president of the church was for the members of the church to make the temple the symbol of their membership. And he encouraged every member to be worthy and to hold a temple recommend, regardless of if you lived close to a temple or not. And, you know, at that time, you know, people wondered, well, why? You know, why should I have a recommend if I'm not going to get a temple? Well, a few short years later came President Hinckley and the wonderful temple building effort that he led and that has continued today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for being here today. We've been discussing the history of the Cardston, Alberta Temple on Legacy. I was joined today with Gary Boatwright and Brady Winslow from the Church History Department. I'm Nathan Wright. This is The Mormon Channel, a media arm of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.